Now, it's time to take a look at what's been making the headlines lately. And earlier, I spoke to Robert Massey from the Royal Astronomical Society and asked him what had caught his eye this month.
Well, I mean, the thing about astronomy, I guess, is that there's always something, you know, whether it's something we see in the night sky or some ambitious new mission or some fantastic science result. And this month, there's a whole clutch of these things as ever. So the first one I thought I'd talk about is a fairly ambitious proposal that's just being discussed to smash a probe into an asteroid. Now, that on itself, I suppose, doesn't sound that impressive. You think, oh, well, surely, you know, you could fly this thing through space and it bangs into them. But there is a really good scientific motive behind all of this, which is to dig into the surface and to analyze the interior structure, because we spend enough time worrying about asteroids hitting the Earth, and obviously we had the very real impact of in the Chelyabinsk and the damage that did. So, you know, clearly there's reason to be concerned. And understanding these objects is a crucial part of that. If ever we're presented with the awful scenario of something big enough to hit the Earth and do significant damage, then knowing how to deal with it requires understanding the object in the first place. And this object, the impact of for surface and interior science, or ISIS as it's being called, would hit a particular asteroid called 1999 RQ36. It's about half a kilometer across, crash into it, and the aim is then to dislodge material in the surface and study that to understand what it's like inside.
Now, I gathered the story that a comet might actually hit Mars next year.
Well, that's right. And not only do you have the discussion about, you know, trying to hit an asteroid deliberately, actually it makes a change, doesn't it, to have us throwing something at an asteroid rather than the asteroid colliding with the Earth. But there's also Mars was faced with the very real prospect of a fairly significantly sized comet hitting it at the end of the year, actually in October this year. Now, the scientists studying it recalculated, and they think it will miss, but it'll only miss by about 68,000 miles, 110,000 kilometers. That's really very, very close. The comet's called C2013A1, bracket siding spring. That's the way we designate them. Most people would probably say comet siding spring. And it's because it's been discovered by the Siding Spring Survey Observatory in Australia. So effectively this time that the robotic system gets to name the comet. But imagine if something like that was happening to the Earth. I mean, apart from, okay, we'd stop worrying once we realized it wasn't going to hit us. But that would be incredible as a sight. I mean, having some comet going past the Earth, significantly closer than the Moon, that really would be quite a spectacular sight. So there are discussions about how it might be possible to use some of the spacecraft, the rovers on the surface, and the orbiters going around Mars to look at this. It may not be very easy, but I think they would have quite a view if they do manage to pull that off.
So how big roughly is this object, say, in comparison to the object that triggered the extinction of the dinosaurs?
Well, this comet Siding Spring is somewhat smaller than that object that possibly led to the extinction of the dinosaurs, the asteroid. But nonetheless, a few kilometres across, it seems to be a reasonable estimate. And if something like that hit the surface of a planet, you're talking about a very, very powerful explosion, I mean, the equivalent of millions of megatons. So do an enormous amount of damage, actually.
Now, sticking with Mars, I gather we've got some pictures of the first spacecraft which sent images from Mars's surface.
Well, that's right. The Mars 3 mission was launched by the Soviet Union right back in the early 1970s, and it was actually the first spacecraft to make a successful soft landing on Mars in December 1971. Sadly, it only lasted about 14 and a half seconds, and it became victim to what's been described as the Great Martian Ghoul that leads to the demise of any Earth-based spacecraft that go that way. Now, of course, actually, we've had quite a lot of successful missions, but there is the joke that because it's really quite difficult to get things to work on Mars, and the Russians certainly had a lot of bad luck with this, that spacecraft often get there and don't work as they should. So Mars 3 only lasted just over 10 seconds, 14 and a half seconds before it shut down. And it sent back an image which was sort of dubious. The Soviet Academy of Sciences wasn't really convinced it showed very much at all. But nonetheless, it was the first transmission from the surface of Mars. And anyway, these amateurs have looked at the archive from the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, which has been studying the surface in quite a lot of detail, and a lot of these data is available. And I don't know how they did it, because I looked at the images, and you can see basically some dots, which when you zoom in on them are reasonably convincing. But they're fairly convinced that they found the location of this spacecraft, its heat shield, and possibly its parachute. So it's really intriguing. It demonstrates at some level, I guess, how good these orbiter spacecraft are in comparison with the 1970s when the vehicle that accompanied this Mars 3 lander, the orbiter, only sent back about 60 pictures. Now, that's not bad. It studied the surface. It sent pictures of mountains and so on. the Russians were unlucky in the sense that they got there and there was a dust storm on, so a lot of the surface was obscured. But nonetheless, it's an impressive achievement. It just does demonstrate, I guess, citizen science and its value again, the fact that people are prepared to go trawl through this data to find these things.
I guess it's interesting to see how the materials have survived over the intervening 30 years.
Well, that's right. I suspect if you went down there, given the nature of Mars and the fact you have these regular dust storms, I imagine that the spacecraft would be covered with various bits of material. I mean, there's a thin atmosphere, a thin poisonous carbon dioxide atmosphere. It's a harsh environment. It's very cold and so on. But it does lift dust up and deposit it and remove it from objects. So that's always a factor in planning space missions there as well. If you want to send rovers to explore the surface, like the Mars Curiosity Lab, you have to allow for that.
Now, stories about Mars have been something of a theme this month, because there's also been headlines about plans to send people on a one-way trip to Mars. What's that
about?
Well,
there seems to be a clutch of private space mission ideas to go to Mars at the moment, and the latest one is Mars One. Mars One is a one-way mission to Mars, so their proposal is to launch in only a few years' time for a fairly cheap, by these standards, price tag of $6 billion, which compares very well, but that's perhaps a reason for skepticism with the NASA estimates of $100 billion or so, or even more. And then the idea would be that humans would settle in about 2023. They send the first spacecraft there to start preparing sites, searching for sites, and so on. The idea is basically that they would sort of live off the land, that they would get there, that the equipment would be deposited there for them, and then they would start using the resources you can find on the surface, so setting up solar panels, to using sunlight, obviously, to power electricity, trying to grow things in the soil, and so on. It is very, very ambitious, and I think I'm a bit skeptical that this will ever happen, because apart from the very low-cost price tag for these things, I mean, $6 billion is a lot of money, but it still sounds pretty cheap for what they want to do. It just also seems incredibly risky, and I just suspect they won't manage to raise the money, or it's also actually perhaps not all that technologically feasible either. One other objection, too, is that there's something called the Planetary Protection Protocol, which is designed to stop us from contaminating places like Mars, because if there is primitive life there, what we don't want to do is turn up in a perhaps less than sterile way, because you can't really do that with people. You can do it far more easily with spacecraft, and end up contaminating the surface and perhaps, you know, causing harm to life on the surface as well. So for those reasons, my honest hunch is it probably won't happen. I mean, it's backed by some very impressive senior scientists, but I just don't know, very unconvinced that this will ever happen.
It does all sound quite incredible. Now, a couple of months ago, we talked to John Richer on the podcast about the Atacama Large Millimeter Array. I gather you got an update on that this month.
Yeah, I mean, ALMA, the Atacama Large Millimeter Array, is really doing good stuff and coming on stream, and it's still being built. But this is an amazing project whereby you've got these dishes that can observe the universe at what's called millimeter and submillimeter wavelengths. So if you're familiar with the spectrum, if you imagine going beyond the red end of the spectrum, think of the rainbow, into the infrared, and then even beyond that into the region we call submillimeter and millimeter. If you go beyond that, you go into more conventional radio waves. Then you can study the universe with particular dish setups like ALMA. And what it can do is look at objects at very high resolution. And the advantage of detecting that kind of radiation as well is that it cuts through dust and so on. So you can study things that are obscured by dust clouds if you look at them with conventional visible light. Now, what ALMA's done is this amazing result where it's observed about 100 galaxies in the space of a few hours, really quite impressive stuff, whereas the telescopes that looked at it before that, it took them a number of years to accumulate that data. So it demonstrates both that the system is working very well, that it's really sensitive, and that it's really promising a lot of stuff coming up in the future. My guess is that we're going to see an awful lot of results from this telescope over the next few years, some very sharp, very high-resolution maps of things, and we're going to be able to study the early universe and all of those things astronomers get excited about.
Robert Massey from the Royal Astronomical Society.